We are in the book of Genesis, and on the sixth chapter, there's a lot to cover in the sixth chapter, but not complicated, I hope, but some clarification of a few things that are written in there. So I would like to have a reader to read the sixth chapter of Genesis.
When man began to multiply on the face of the land, and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of man were attractive, and they took as their wives any they chose. Then the Lord said, My spirit shall not abide in man forever, for he is flesh. His days shall be 120 years. Then Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward. When the sons of God came in to the daughters of man, and they were born children to them. These were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, man, animals, and creeping things, and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God, and Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end to all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them from the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark, and cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you are to make it. The length of the ark, 300 cubits. Its breadth, 50 cubits. And its height, 30 cubits. Make a roof for the ark and finish it to a cubit above. And set the door of the ark in its side. Make it with lower, second, and third decks. For behold, I will bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh in which is the breath of life under heaven. Everything that is on the earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh you shall bring two of every sort into the ark and keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds according to their kinds, and of the animals according to their kinds, and of creeping things on the ground according to its kind. Two of every sort shall come in to you and keep them, and you are to keep them alive. Also with you, take every sort of food that is eaten and store it up. It shall serve as food for you and for them. Noah did this. He did all that the Lord had commanded him.
Any thoughts? Any comments? There aren't any?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, there are a few.
There are.
Okay.
It's thought, I don't know completely, that the men of renown that are in here were really strong men, and it said that they built the pyramids and all of the...
This is way before. I mean, this is the flood. No pyramids were made before the flood.
Oh, not before the... But these men were like really strong men.
Well, we'll talk about what Hebrew says about that. You got a good question there. We'll talk about it because renown is a very important name. Or notice what it's referring to. Yes, we'll talk about that as well.
In verse 6, it says, And the Lord was sorry that he made man, and he grieved in his heart, and he said, I'm sorry that I've made him. And this is, it makes you ask, how could God be sorry he did something if he knew ahead of time exactly what was going to happen? How did it surprise him?
Well, you're talking about predestination. Well, I'm not in Romans. I'm a Genesis. We'll discuss that. Any other questions? Any thoughts? An awful lot of people have an awful lot of doctrinal thoughts, an awful lot of doctrinal belief systems. I'm not here necessarily to challenge everything. I mean, you can believe what you want to believe, once again. But I want to be able to, perhaps, yes.
He said that you should take, in number 21, and you should take for yourself all the food that is eaten. And you should, is this because he wants to have the seeds and be prepared?
No, it says literally in Hebrew to keep them alive.
They keep the seeds and
keep the people, keep the animals alive.
Right, but they said these were seeds and everything.
But the plants were not destroyed. Plant is not. He's only going to destroy that which is. He said he would destroy. Plants survived the flood.
Uh huh.
They survived the flood.
Okay, so this story is also a parallel to us. Also, that
we'll talk about that.
You know what I mean? There's a deeper meaning in this.
We'll talk about that.
Allegory.
Book of Noah is a very interesting book. It's called the Book of Noah, by the way, from chapter 6 to chapter 11. It's a phrase they use because now we're talking about Noah and what happened in his life and what he made a dent in. All right. Now, some of you probably have no idea what this is all about. I hope maybe I'll explain to some of you, for you're kind of like brand new. It's very interesting here. In the very first sentence says something. I want you to pay attention to exactly what it says. Then we'll go on the second sentence and pay close attention to what it says. All right? There are a lot of belief systems out there. It came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born unto them. That's what it says, right? Men. And the next statement has a really odd, usual statement. It says, the sons of Elohim. It says, the sons of Elohim saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. Now, it's an odd terminology, right? So, we have this conflict of just... Is there two different groups of things out there? One of them's sons of God, the other one's sons of men. No, daughters of men, rather. And there's sons of God. Doesn't say they're sons of men, it says daughters of men.
Yeah.
Pretty odd statement, don't you think?
I do.
Now, it's very interesting to know and pay attention to why it's phrased this way. It wasn't done by, any other accident. The author forgot to write other things in there. The author is trying to tell us something. And who's the author? Creator of heaven and earth is telling us something here. As God is talking to us, remember everything I've said before in the past, I'll say again, that when we read anything in the Bible, it's not about how men think, not how men are, not how men act, or the emotions of men, the feelings of men, the women crying or bawling. That's what we do in our world. We're hearing something here that we're finding out. What is it that Elohim thinks? What is it Elohim talks about? What is Elohim, what is he troubled with? What is his feelings? What is his thoughts? See, as you know, when we look at the Bible tells us the mind and the heart and the being of the creator of heaven and earth and what he is thinking, what he is saying, and we have to say, do I believe him? Because we as human beings, we are centered around ourselves. And we have a tendency, we want to quote what they do. I'm probably going to get it wrong. They give a testimony. Or they give their, other sorrows, the pain and agony to one another. And so we all feeling one another. We get feeding one another. I'm so sorry about this. You're sick, you're ill. I'm so sorry. I'll pray about it. Or he was, I just want to hear how bad my mom was. My dad was a mean guy. I want to tell you how bad he was. God doesn't talk about that, does he? What does he talk about? This chapter tells you that he became troubled. In Hebrew, we'll get to that word. He became not just upset, but he himself, personally, we'll get to that in a minute, felt a loss. A major loss. And we look at it, oh, look, mankind, he wiped mankind out. El Shaddai became his name. Well, because he had to do something that he didn't really. And he tells us in this chapter how he felt about it. Now let's go on. First, before I continue, I want to backtrack a little bit in chapter 5, if you don't mind. Let's see, where was that? In there, first chapter, it says there, first verse, chapter 1, verse 1, another chapter 5, it says, "This is the book of the generation of Adam." Right? The fourth chapter was the, quote, what was the fourth chapter about? Cain. Cain. Now, when we get to the fifth chapter, we find there's something very interesting. Do you know how old Adam was when Cain was born? Do you know how old Adam was when Abel was born? Do you know how old Adam was when Seth was born? Yes. 135. So we have a time sequence. Now God has put in a time. Now you remember what God said to the serpent? I'm going to put an enmity between you and her. Right? And the key word is seed in her will destroy your seed. Right? And he'll crush your head. Now, what did Eve say after the death of her Abel. You remember what she said? No, it's very important. I read why we're going through this thing because what people have, because our Bible's separated this, and even the Jewish Bible's separated this way, they separate this thought as independent from that thought, independent of that thought, independent. Nothing is connected with one another. The first chapter has nothing to connect with the second chapter. Second chapter, nothing to connect with the third chapter except the tree. And nothing to connect to the fourth chapter except, you know, Cain. Nothing to connect the fifth chapter except Seth. All right. So there's a connection going through here in all this. Now she said in the fourth chapter of Genesis, listen, here what I'm trying to get, I'll get my point across in a minute. He said the very fourth chapter, and she said, and Adam knew his wife again, verse 25, chapter 4, don't have to turn there, write down, again, and she bore a son and called his name Seth. For Elohim, says she, hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel. So now we have a seed that's passed on to Abel. He was killed. Now, Seth comes on the scene. Very important. We read a book about Seth. And she said, and to whom Cain slew. And to Seth, to him also were born sons. And he called his name Enos. Then, very important here, verse 26, began men to call upon the name of Yahuwah. That's in the fourth chapter. All right? Now, that was also in the fourth chapter about Cain. Right? No one knows how old Cain was when he died. No one knows how old anybody in the fourth chapter was when they died or when they were born. No one knows. Is that a mistake? Or is it something God is telling us what's more important to look at? Now we have a certain age with the birth of Cain, the birth of Seth, and that Adam was what? Chapter 5, Genesis chapter 5, verse 3. Very important to go back and read it just for a minute before we continue on to chapter 6. I'll get to my point here as a pattern that's very important. All right? He said something very interesting here in the third chapter. That is, I'm saying God wrote death down for a purpose for us to live. And Adam lived 135 years and begat a son in his own likeness after his own image, and he called his name the substitute one.
135.
No, 130. Okay, it's 130, right. But the point is, what I'm trying to get at, this is very fascinating. Like we say, oh, yeah. Why? Does that matter? Does that matter that this guy, Seth, looks like his dad? And it's listed like just like him? That's a stupid statement to say, right? No. What did he say? Planted another seed. Now, we already read that men began to call upon the name of Yahuwah. What chapter? Chapter 5. So we're getting a connection here. That name of that son tells us something. Not that every one of Seth's sons, not every one of Seth's daughters did that. There are certain people who associate themselves with God. God has a very selective person. He selects people, not but millions, hundreds or billions. He selects them one by one by one by one. In this sixth chapter, we're talking about a seed. Now we go back to Genesis chapter 6. Remember I told you a seed and a seed and a seed? There is no historical evidence except the generation of Adam, where age is given, time of birth, time of death, time of birth, time of death, time of birth, time of death. That seed kept going. All remember he said to Abram, in thy seed the world will be blessed. The same thing that was promised to Eve in the very beginning. When did that count stop? When the Messiah was born. Nobody has a seed beyond that point. It stopped at his point. We have the book of Luke. Dates it. Book of Luke dates it from that birth all the way back to Adam. They don't go forward because it doesn't exist anymore. The seed came. And the Messiah said he's going to crush the head. The seed that was promised. I should say it was cursed upon the devil or the serpent. It came to an end. And remember what Jesus said Yahshua said when he was going to be executed? Now the judgment is on the devil. He is now condemned. Wasn't he condemned way back then? Not according to the Messiah. He was condemned just before Messiah was to be killed. Just before the Messiah was killed. Let me go back there and read that. I think it's the book of John. Yes.
The line went through. No,
I'm talking about Luke. Luke dates it all the way back to Adam. Mark, he only dates it to Abraham. Matthew dates it to Abraham and no farther. Luke goes all the way back to Adam. Right? Yeah. So it's kind of important to see how these are connected. Chapter 2 connects to chapter 3. Chapter 3 connects to 4. 4 connects to 5. And 5 connects to 6. All the way down there at the point of Noah. And what was Noah's name meant? The one who brings forth rest. Not peace, rest. A place of resting place. A resting place. So now, verse 2 of chapter 6 says that the sons of Elohim, we'll get in a minute, hold on. Basically, I'm saying it's the generation of Adam, or the line, or the seed, which is to come and continue to and through notifying the sons of Elohim. Remember what Yahshua said to the Sadducees? You err not knowing Scripture. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, God is a God of the living. Do anybody in this room think that Abraham is not a son of God? Or is Isaac a son of God? Or Isaac, what was the last one? Jacob, son of God, going to the son of the living, and God's ever living. They are sons of lights. You are sons of lights. We are sons of light, but not in that line, not in that seed, not in that direction. Not all the children of Abram received the promise. How many of them received the promise? Just one. All the children of Isaac, how many received the promise? Just one. Of all the seeds of Jacob, who received the promise? Just one. I thought God worked in the multiple billions of people. He's saving the lives of billions and billions and billions and billions of people. He's failing from the very beginning. He's just clapped. Only gets one at a time, one at a time, one at a time. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Devil's having more power, isn't he? Well, that's how the world looks at it sometimes. They think there's a big battle between the Satan and God losing the battle. He must have lost at the very beginning with Adam and Eve. All right? Yes?
It's sad that, you know, that certain denominations believe that during that time that Satan had taken Christ up, that afterwards, when he made that comment, that he went in and took the keys to hell of hell. That thought is believed.
Yeah, but once again, if it's not written,
I don't know. Is that?
Yeah, if it's not written, that's not true, right? If it's not written, it's not true.
I mean, you can make it sound like, you know, he went in there flying in there, went deep in the earth, and pulled out a set of keys.
If it's not written, it's not true.
No, I'm right. It sounded bizarre, but
I only preach what is written. Others preach what they believe.
Yeah.
Sometimes they preach what I believe, and I say, "This is Richard Age's thinking." So I not? I say, "This is how Richard thinks." All right, and so I make myself very clear between the two. So how are we doing so far? Yes.
I don't know if you've already gotten to the point. If I just missed it in verse 2 about the sons of God, are we talking about the seed up to this point?
Right. Those who are in that line, there are two lines. One is the line of men, the other is the line of Elohim. Leading the two, the birth of Messiah. Line of men outnumber in the billions, quadrillions, in relationship to the line of Elohim. No, one prophecy is Elohim.
No, there's God.
Correct. Seed of the promise. It's spoken to him, spoken to the devil in chapter 2? 3? I can't remember, about the garden. 2, 3. I'm going to put an enmity between you and her. Not even you and Adam, but you and her. Now, sometimes because we live in a world, well, it's Adam's sin. Because of his sin, we all die in sin. Well, that's true. What other sin did Adam do? Is it recorded? And what other sin did Eve do? It's not recorded. You know, God doesn't really record a tremendous amount of sins of people. He really doesn't. He gets down to detail in certain individuals, like King David, for a reason. Because the seed was supposed to pass through him. He had to purify that man up before he can continue. Now it says here, someone asked the question, and they took them, wives, if they chose. And I said, well, what verse was it at? Next verse was, verse 3. I got to go with that verse 3 first. Some of your English translations, and he read it a little differently than what I have here, even in Hebrew. But I'm reading Old English. It says, "And Yahuwah, my spirit, not anybody else, just his, shall not always," the word is strive. A lot of your English words have strive, or struggle with, or quarrel with. What does that word mean? It comes from a verb of deen. You know what the word deen means in Hebrew? Deen. It's a verb to judge. Dan judges. Dan is the noun for the word, for the verb deen. Dan is the word for the judge or a judge. So he says, "I will not judge." And he puts 120 years. Now, we know prophecy doesn't mean physically 120 years, because it never adds up, technically speaking, the book of Genesis. And we have a very fascinating thing that when we get to a point later on, we're going to find out something he said. I'm going to jump ahead just a little bit here. In this verse, verse 3, it says that where Elohim now states that his spirit is not always going to judge men or man. Later on, he says to Noah, we'll get there when we get there. And remember, keep one thing, when he made this statement, not strive or not judge, not put sentence down there, he said it after the sons of Elohim were taken on the daughters of men. So you know where his judgment was against. The sons of Elohim who were going contrary to his will. Now, later on he says, I will no longer judge. Who did he pass the judgment on to? To Noah. No, you're getting there. Okay. You're jumping ahead. He's going to pass it on to the Son of Man. Who is the Son of Man? Yahshua is the Son of Man. He says, I am the final judge. I judge everything. So everything came to his point. He had to become a human being, a man, in order that he can be the judge of all mankind. And what does he say the Father does? He judges nobody. So it's a prophecy way back in the book of Noah. It's heading toward that seed that's going to be the Son of Man who's going to do the judging. And he said, when you see the Son of Man come in the cloud, man, the judge is coming. Here comes the judge. Here comes the judge. That's a very fascinating terminology. All right, so my question I had to ask when I look at this thing, logically, you know, because I'm a human being. Weren't there any daughters of Elohim? Doesn't say. Because not talk about daughters of Elohim. There were sons of Elohim. Very fine, that's very fascinating. Now, what did it say? What did it say? Oh, my backtrack. I just got a backtrack, if you don't mind. What did it say? They saw daughters of men, and they were fair, and it took them wives of all which they chose.
They?
The Elohim, sons of Elohim. Now, let's move forward. Real, real rapidly. Messiah said something very unusual. But of that day and hour, no man knows, no, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man be. What were the days of Noah like before the flood? What were they doing? They saw daughters of men, and they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. The men, and listen, the world is going to be facing a very heavy thing. We understand that. But as we as human beings, we are associated with God, we have to be careful. Say, God said, do not, what? Can two walk together unless they agree?
Right.
They didn't care about agreeing. What were they caring about? Their desire. And he continues on. He says now, for in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. That's an interesting statement, isn't it?
Yeah.
Here the Messiah says, as the days of Noah. So go back and I go back. Okay, what happened during the day? Just before the flood, what was going on before the days of the flood? He said, before the days, they were eating and drinking and marrying who they wanted to do. Oh, is that what they were doing in verse 2? Genesis chapter 2? Chapter 6, rather? Yeah. Exactly what the Messiah said. And he said to Noah, get on the boat. Get on the boat. No, make a boat. Get on the boat. We'll get there in a minute. Now, verse 4. Most people understand this thing, but I need to clarify it, just in case. Because it says, and there were giants, in Old English, in the earth in those days. And also, after that, when the sons of Elohim came into the daughters of men, same phrase, they bore them the same mighty men of renown. Now, what does giant mean? Well, he read it in Nephilim. What does that in Hebrew mean? Nephilim. Who were Nephilim? Well,
they were the fallen angels.
No, they were? Well, let's go to Numbers chapter 13. Numbers chapter 13. I'm reading for the American Revised Standard here. Verse 33. And there we saw Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who came from the Nephilim. Wait a minute. Weren't they all drowned? Yeah. They all died. Now all of a sudden we got these giants again. Now what does Nephilim mean? Does not mean giants. What do you think it means?
The fallen ones.
The fallen ones. Simple little language to follow. Fall from what? From what? Fallen in godliness. All right.
Fallen.
Good phrase. Okay.
Fallen from grace. Yeah.
Fall, no, there's no. It doesn't say they're falling from grace.
They've fallen from
grace. It doesn't say they've fallen from grace. It's the mighty men of renown. When the Elohim, sons of Elohim, they had kids from the men, sons of men, and something came about, and men of renown. What does renown mean? It means the word name. What kind of name? Mighty name. What's mighty name mean? Well, see, in Hebrew, yes, it could be in the sense of, yeah, physically strong, physically mighty, a warrior, all that kind of stuff. It also means other things. Doesn't say big in sense, just says. That's right, grasshopper like grasshopper. So they're big men, okay? That's one of the definitions of the word Nephilim. But what about, what is it saying here in relationship to, what does it mean mighty men? Yes?
Well, the word Nephilim, for those of you who need a Hebrew lesson today,
okay,
comes from the Hebrew word Nephal, which in your Strong's is number 5307. Means to fall or to lie. Other meanings include like abandoned, attacked, cast down, defected, fallen away, inferior, falling down, lie down, this kind of meaning. It doesn't mean that they were necessarily mighty in height or stature physically.
Well, we get to the word mighty men. Now, that comes from a different word. And it has to be, can mean powerful, can mean warrior. But it generally means one who is mighty. And chapter 10, Genesis chapter 10, same word, verse 8. And Cush begat Nimrod, and he became a mighty one in the earth. Now, how mighty was Cush, or Nimrod? He built three empires. So before the flood, these mighty men probably had, I'm thinking out loud, okay, were probably mighty men in a relationship like we see Nimrod, warrior, had empires. They had strength, they had power. Yeah? I know that my brother was a 6'1" guy, and very gentle guy, but a short guy comes up and talks with him, he stands off just a little bit. My brother was strong. Doesn't know it. Before my brother says anything, they stand away. Because he's a big man. He can beat me up, right? And then he starts talking. Oh, he's gentle. They walk up to him and talk with him. But, you know, a big man does cause another man to stand away a little bit just in case. Many years ago, when I went to Feast Tabernacles up in Tahoe, there was a big man there. he was large. He came into our place where we were staying with his friends. And he sat down right next to me. And I was sitting waiting, okay. And a deep, powerful voice. And sometimes when I speak, I don't speak softly, I speak firmly. Well, that's what he did to me. How are you? Fine. Oh, and then he began to be friendly. But you know, my first thought was, stay your distance with this guy. Just like monogamy on the floor if I say the wrong thing, you know. But it's a psychological thing when you get too big, powerful. Not that all men are that way. So we're talking about these mighty men. We're talking about men that are not just big and strong and mighty. They have strength. They have power to be able to change and influence by their influence and what they do. Yes.
It just seems to me, at least on some level, that they were feared. Like in a worldly way, they were feared.
Right.
That, you know, and that gave them power to rule.
Yeah. Mankind always goes for peer pressure. Renowned means the ones with a big name. The ones that became name, well-known, well-regulated. They had a reputation also. Then a translation for the name is one has a reputation. Now, the Messiah has a name, right? Does his reputation follow him? Yeah. Elohim has a name. Does reputation follow him? Oh, yeah. Yes.
I just wanted to say that we always judge by appearance. And
we always, yeah.
God doesn't. And we vote by appearance. And politicians get plastic surgery to win.
So. Now we're going to drop down to verse 6, try to answer Ella's question. And in your old English, it says, he repented. What does repentance mean? I'm sorry, what? No, that's teshuva. This word is not teshuva in Hebrew. Let me ask you a personal question. When you repent, how do you feel? You what?
Sorry.
And what?
Remorse.
Wish you'd done something differently. Believe it or not, that's the exact same thing in Hebrew. This Hebrew word does not mean that he made a mistake. It says it's a sigh of disappointment. It's a sigh. And he is one who consoles oneself. When you repent with inside yourself, who you're talking to, you know inside of yourself something went wrong, something went bad. It doesn't mean that everything you're consoling about is what you did. You console because something is a great loss. Have you ever lost something inside and you have to talk with yourself sometimes internally to overcome it? We have this thing in a modern terminology, what's called a closure. People have to have this closure. Are the people who need closure, are they remorseful? Yes. Are they repentful? Yes, because they're thinking of themselves in Hebrew. Here we're seeing that God is said in the last part of chapter 6. And it says very carefully. Now, I told you that this book tells you the feelings of God. This chapter tells you the heart of God. What was God's heart like? Grieved. What does grieved mean? Hurt, pain, anguish, sorrow. So when we think of our emotions, we think of ourselves, don't we? We go to repentance and think about grieving. We think of ourselves, right? The Elohim does say the same thing. Now, I also say, I don't know, somewhere in the New Testament, I don't know right hand where it is, but Apostle Paul says, do not grieve the Spirit of God. You mean you could actually make the Spirit of God sorrow? You actually make the Spirit of God feel something's not, this is hurting me. This is troubling me.
We say, oh, no, I can't hurt God's feelings.
I mean, you can't hurt his feelings. Whole world, before the flood, hurt his feelings. It broke his heart. Put it in that terminology. You mean God doesn't have a heart, so he can't be broken? God has no feelings, so he doesn't have any emotions. We're seeing this very first part of this entire Genesis. The first chapter, he was happy. Well, he did. He was pleased what he did. It was good because it was good. And now we're in the sixth chapter. And he says, oh, I'm sorry I did this. It didn't go the way I really wanted it to go. And let's continue a minute. I'll get back to you in a minute. And Yahuwah said, I will destroy man, whom I created from the face of the earth, both man, beast, creeping things, fowl of the air. For it grieves me, or it repents me. I'm sorry that I made them. Now we say, oh, he's just saying that. Be a tough guy, that he shows feelings. No, no. I believe what is written. My personal opinion, I believe that what is written. He felt sorrow. And in Hebrew, that repentance does not mean repenting from sin. Good question.
My question is, you know, the idea of omniscience, that he knows all things already. He could see himself be sorrowful about Noah or about the world.
Well, if that's true, but what the prophet says, you have done things I've never thought of. So it's not that he knows everything, so he should be sitting up there eating a sucker and having fun.
No.
Right? Oh, I'll get some ice cream. I know what's going on. I'm gonna live up here and you have fun and activity. I'm gonna ignore everything gone down there because I know what's going on. Anyway, no matter what. Why, if he was that way, why is he so involved with your life? Why is he so involved with his son's life? Why is he so involved with Noah's life? If he didn't, he already knew what was going to happen. Why? Push the button. No reset button. Just let it happen. Yes?
Two things. Because I've heard this chapter taught differently than this.
Yes.
Matthew 22:30 says that angels don't marry, so that rules out the fact that anybody could take it from the point of view that the sons of God were angels.
Angels do not reproduce.
Right. Second thing, this gives a little different slant on really praying over your kids and for your kids that they marry the person he picks, because he picks the lineage. And you mess up the lineage situation when
they may see God's choice in their
life. It's a big deal.
Yeah. You had a question, John. I mean, Sean.
I'm just trying to comprehend here because, you know, when I think of the scripture, Yehovah has declared the end from the very beginning.
Right.
And the way I've been taught, he's, you know, knows all, you know. So you're suggesting that. What am I saying here? Because I look at this, and why would he go through a process of being grieved in his heart, destroying it, if he knew already ahead of time?
Doesn't say he knows it already. He tells us in the beginning, tells you the end. End of what? Beginning of what? The end of what? Mankind? No. His will. I'm telling my will in the very beginning. I'm telling my will at the very end. It's written in the very beginning. It's his will. And God said, when Abraham was going to take the life of his son, what did the angel, who was quoting and representing the creator of heaven and earth, what did that angel say? Now I know. You didn't know before? No, I'm just an angel. I didn't know what's going on. Oh, no. He's speaking for the creator of heaven and earth. Sorry, what? Correct. There's no time for him. Yes.
I'm just thinking for a second that, you know, God might know in a path, but if we get on another path, he gives us a path that we get off. And, you know, he waits patiently like any father. Like, say your kids are naughty and we go off. But then it shows the father says he sees the son far off coming back. So when we can change our path, some people don't change. They get so far deep into that problem that they don't come out. But then yet,
okay,
it's like seeing us come back to him, right?
Let me clarify what I think you're saying, if I understand what you're saying. Right? And Ezekiel talks about three generations.
Right.
Okay. The first generation, the old man does good. Second generation, the son does lousy. The third generation, the young man does good. Now, he also says that if the unrighteous turns his way at the end of his life, I will count all unrighteousness as if it doesn't exist. He also said, if the righteous turn from his way and becomes unrighteous, his righteousness is forgotten. I'll never remember it again. So, now, he's saying this. Does that mean, oh, I know that Richard's going to be unrighteous when he dies because I knew about 3,000 billion years ago, trillions ago, whatever you want to call it, tape age? No. He doesn't know that. Otherwise, he wouldn't command me to hear him. Why would I ever have to obey him and hear him if I'm automatically going to be condemned? Or I'm automatically going to be saved? Why should I even pretend and think and act the way I do? I'm going to have eternal life no matter what I do.
You just can't.
Because it's forever and forever and forever. I have a hard time with it. Personally speaking, I have a hard time with that. So when God says, I don't know, I believe he said, I don't know.
Where does he
call that? He told that to Abraham when he'll kill his son. Ezekiel 30. Oh, right of hand. So it's the book of Ezekiel.
It says his ways are not our ways. It says his thoughts are higher than us.
Correct.
It's very hard for us to presume that we can understand. We cannot understand. That's why he says that we need to just accept it and, you know, do as he says. We're children. He's the father. There's no way we can comprehend what he is. I mean, his knowledge is so beyond our understanding. I mean, he's infinite.
I understand that point, but God said, I will give you the knowledge you need. He will give the knowledge you need. Period. Point blank.
He also says, let this mind be in you. That is his mind. To me, we can understand. We read the Psalms.
Because he says, in all you get, you get understanding.
What his heart looks like. We read the Torah. We know how he thinks, why he thinks. But those are big questions. Did he know or didn't he know? Because I had always been taught,
okay,
God knows everything. Well,
let's change the subject matter because it's not going to be something that we can communicate with right now today. If you believe God knows everything and you're going to be damned or saved, then go ahead. I have a little harder time with that, personally speaking. I have to have it written. All right. God knows everything about human beings, what they do and how they think and how they act, because he created them that way. You got a fast one, Jeff?
Well, just one last thing to cap that out. The fact that he does know everything cannot be ruled out, because he does say that the things are written for us, not for him. So for him to know what the end result is does not have any bearing on what we do, because we do not know the end of our days. We are here in the moment, and anything we know about tomorrow, you know, is something that he has revealed to us. So for him to drop in and out of time, that's completely possible, and it cannot be ruled out.
In verse 9, it says here, these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect, and walked with Elohim. Now, we know about Enosh, right? Doesn't say he was just, doesn't say he was perfect, just said he walked with God. This guy got two more points on him, right? What does just mean? A lawful and righteous and upright man. Oh, really? What does perfect mean? The entire thing is whole. It's there in Exodus 12th chapter, verse 4, about the lamb or the goat for Passover, that it is perfect. Not a flaw. Not a flaw, inwardly or outwardly. Pretty important man, wouldn't you think? And it says he walked. Same word with what it said to Enoch. What's it mean to walk?
Walk it out.
You live with God. Actually, you live with God. No, it's a pretty important man, don't you think? Most kids know about a part of him. Not really. They only know about him as the ark. And all those stuffed animals on it. Poking their heads out of a little tiny boat. Anyway, verse 11. I'm almost finished here. And the earth was corrupt before Elohim, and the earth was filled with violence. Now, of course, we'll go real quickly. Corrupt means, like he read it right. When Jeff read it right, the actual word is, it was in decay. How was it in decay? Well, it continues on and tells you how it was in decay. How do you think it was in decay? And the word violent means, basically, to be maltreated. Treated in an ungodly way. Verse 12. Elohim looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt. All flesh had corrupted the earth with their gasoline engines. Oh, and with their, what you got back there, a little walkie-talkie thing? No, that little thing back there tells you, yeah. The phone thing, you know, iPhones, back phones, white phones, whatever. What did they corrupt?
God's way.
So when you look at this word, the earth was corrupt. It didn't mean a bunch of politicians in Washington, D.C. You said that, I didn't. Okay, anyway. But you understand, we're talking about a different kind of corruption. The earth was not in a state of pollution. It was a state of decaying. What was it decaying in? Because decaying in the relationship that God said, you have corrupted my ways. Oh, can you corrupt God's way? Oh, really? I think it was in the book of Romans, Apostle Paul says, it is written that I am profaned because of you among the nations. Yeah. Yeah, it really could happen to God. It really can be a picture of God. You make his ways, you profane them. You corrupt them. You make them unholy. All right. The rest of the chapter we don't need to go through. We'll go later on, verse 18 and 20, farther on down the book. But that ark was 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet high. It was three layers. Bam, bam, bam. Pretty high. And the opening of it was 18 inches. 18 inches. 18 inches? No. It says from a certain point, 18 inches down, there was the opening. It's kind of a funny way of looking at it. Like 18 inches? No, 18 inches from a certain point. Yes.
You said, okay, now, Noah's three sons, when after the flood and everything, the giants were still around, right?
No. The word giant doesn't mean big.
Okay, big. Okay. Oh, okay. So, right. Oh, I see. Okay, I was just thinking of Noah's sons.
The ones are following, and she clarified that.
I was just thinking
now, and it's a certain, we're not down that family where it says there are numbers. Why are they called the fallen ones? Why are they called the ones who did something that corrupted themselves? Good way of doing it. But when we get to that man's name, we get to that man's point in the Genesis, we'll have to look at his life, what it was about, who is he? And we'll have a picture of something. God willing. That's the way, ways down there. Ways down there. I'm still struggling here. All right, so before my closure today, I want you to kind of notice the connection from second chapter to the third chapter. The tree of life is connected, tree of knowledge connected. From the third chapter to the fourth chapter, a connection was made. The son killed the other brother. And then in that same chapter, Seth was born, connected to the fifth chapter. And we see in the fifth chapter, repeating itself, the sons of God. Fifth chapter means the sons of the generations of Adam. Now we come to the sixth chapter. Men began to multiply themselves to the face of the earth. And another group, if I can call them that, began to compromise. In a sense, they began to corrupt the ways of God. Marrying and giving in marriage, contrary to how God wanted it to be done. All right? That's why we have Yahshua talking about that particular point in time in Noah. Extremely connected right there in the sixth chapter of Genesis.